Northeast Florida has a new state attorney elect. Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast, too, on iTunes and the WJCT app, and watch the show, video on demand, at tvjax.com. And this morning, we want your calls as we have a post-election conversation with new state attorney Melissa Nelson. Get on the line right now at 549-2937. Then later, doctors on the First Coast are raising awareness this September about a hidden health hazard, brain aneurysms. Plus, we'll tell you how the First Coast is marking 100 years of our national parks. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, she's the political newcomer who ousted State Attorney Angela Corey in a landslide. Just a few short months ago, Melissa Nelson was a highly regarded corporate attorney and former prosecutor here in Jacksonville. But the wife and mother was not known to the public at large. That all changed as Nelson rode to victory on a strong campaign that capitalized on a series of controversies during Corey's 8-year tenure. Melissa Nelson will take office in January. So, how will the leadership of the Fourth Circuit change? State Attorney-elect Melissa Nelson joins us now in studio with more about her goals for criminal justice in this area, and she takes your calls. Melissa Nelson, thanks for being with us, and congratulations.
Melissa, thanks for having me.
And what are your calls and questions for new State Attorney-elect Melissa Nelson, beating Angela Corey in a landslide in the primary election on August 30th? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on our Facebook page. You won this primary, as I said, in a landslide, 64% of the vote to Corey's 26%. Wes White received less than 10%. Angela Corey leaves office in January. She's the first incumbent state attorney in modern Florida history to lose a contested election. With this sweeping mandate, you will have a lot of political capital to implement some changes when it comes to how the prosecutor's office works. What are the biggest priorities for you as you begin this new position?
Thanks. To begin with, the very first thing that I intend to do, which will be a priority of the office, is to work to restore confidence throughout our community in the state attorney's office and, by extension, the criminal justice system. I think the state attorney has a platform to be collaborative with different segments of our community, and I'm looking very forward to working hard and efficiently to implement and start to build those relationships throughout Jacksonville, Nassau, and Clay County.
And you talked a lot about that during the campaign, how you foresaw the potential of still prosecuting criminals, but in a smarter, fairer way. Across the country, we saw prosecutors, not only Angela Corey, but other controversial prosecutors lose elections this cycle. And there was a lot of discussion about how the traditional tough-on-crime policies that really were a hallmark of her tenure are falling out of favor with the public. Can you give some examples of the types of specific tweaks or changes you'll make in the way the prosecutor's offices run that, you know, voters in the Fourth Circuit are hoping that you implement?
Well, to begin with, as you mentioned, our message throughout our campaign from the beginning and until the end, and what I intend to implement at the state attorney's office, is a message of tough, obviously, but fair. So all of us want to be safe. And that is the first and foremost mission of the state attorney's office, is public safety. But we have to have faith and confidence that the system is actually fair. So while we want to be safe and we want law enforcement and certainly the state attorney's office to be tough, we also need to have faith that the system is fair. So what I intend to do is to be very smart about how we investigate, prosecute, and implement punishment. And what I mean by that, an example I gave a lot on the campaign trail, not my own, but I think a good example, is that if three kids go into a grocery store and all commit theft, but one commits theft as a result of a dare and has a long record of stealing, one commits theft because he or she is hungry and doesn't have food at home, and one commits theft because they're drug addicted. This, though they've committed the same crime, the punishment for all three should not be the same. And so I intend to just be smarter. And when I talk about collaboration, use resources here that are available to the state attorney's office in a way that will allow us to impact public safety and be fiscally responsible as well for the taxpayers here.
And it's 549-2937 to connect with new state attorney Melissa Nelson. She ousted former state attorney Angela Corey in a landslide in the August 30th primary. We'll go to your calls in just a moment. And you worked in the state attorney's office, then you became a private corporate attorney. You were one of the attorneys that got together to try to change the outcome for a child that was charged by Corey as an adult. He was 12 years old at the time when he was charged and placed in solitary confinement, Christian Fernandez. Was it that case that prompted you to consider running for this office, your involvement in that case?
That was certainly my involvement in that case was in part a reason that gave rise to my desire to do this. Having come from that office, I have great care for the function of that office and the criminal justice system as a whole. And so I being in private practice and having the opportunity to work on that case certainly was a factor in reaching this decision. But that was among many factors that led to the decision.
What else nudged you in? Because it's my understanding that there was a chorus of voices encouraging you to run for a long time before you made the decision, right before the filing deadline.
This really represented to me, I believed it was important that we have change in that office, and this represented an opportunity to serve. So I've worked at McGuire Woods for the last 7 years. It's been a great opportunity, and I've grown as a professional and as a lawyer while there. But this was, I believed, necessary, and I believed I had the support to run and then be successful.
You served under Angela Corey when she was state attorney.
I did.
And left the office on good terms.
I did.
When you worked in the office, did you feel that the management and the running of the office was on a good path? Was it after you left that you started to join the chorus of critics who weren't happy with the way the office was being managed and the decisions that were being made?
What will be important for me in going forward is that decisions will be made based on the facts and on the law and will not be politically driven. So when I left in 2009 and joined McGuire Woods, my intention at the time was to solely focus on civil litigation and not do any criminal work. I have continued to do pro bono work in the criminal courtroom. But just as the community has watched, I was troubled by decisions of that office, and so that's one of the things that I intend to change. We will be very fair in our application of the law. We will be very tough in making sure that we protect the public, and our decisions will not be political in nature.
What decisions do you feel your predecessor made that might have been perceived as political in nature?
Well, I'm really excited today to talk about what I intend to do with the office. And so after a hard-hitting four-month campaign, I really do want to focus on looking forward as opposed to retrospectively.
Okay. And one of the things you talked about on the as a specific example of how you would differ from Angela Corey is you mentioned the story of three young people stealing food and their different motivations for doing so. You've pledged to up the use of civil citations for nonviolent juvenile offenders. That was something that former state attorney Corey took criticism for when she was in office. Is that a priority for you?
What I've said continuously, and I've obviously, I think this is very important for our community, is I want to invest law enforcement with the discretion to use civil citation as they deem fit. Those are the folks who are trained. They're on the ground. We know without a doubt the data is unequivocal that once a child is in the criminal justice system, the chances of recidivism go through the roof, which makes all of us less safe and has a negative impact on the safety of the community as a whole. So I think using extrajudicial alternatives and alternative forms of sentencing is a priority, will be a priority of my administration. And as to civil citation, vesting law enforcement with the discretion to use it as they deem appropriate is something I will fully support.
Lots of calls if you're just tuning in for new state attorney Melissa Nelson, who rode to victory in a landslide on the August 30th primary, ousting state attorney Angela Corey. We're going to go to your calls right now at 549-2937. And it looks as though public defender-elect Charles Cofer has called into the show. Charles Cofer, good morning. How are you? Charlie Cofer, are you there? All right, Charles Cofer, I'm going to put you back on hold. If you're still listening, stay on the line. We'll go to you in a minute. It's 549-2937. Mike is in Arlington. Hi, Mike. Good morning to you. How are you this morning?
Hi. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Okay, thanks. Go ahead.
Good deal. Well, I was going to ask about law enforcement reform, which seems to be kind of a hot button. But after listening to your last comment, I'd like to actually change tack a little bit and ask specifically about the relationship of the prosecutor's office with the police department. It seems that that was where Angela Corey, at least on the public perception, had probably her strongest and most steadfast support. I don't know how accurate that was. I know that that's one of the things that was highly touted was how well she was supported by the police department. And if I recall right, she was heavily endorsed by the police union and whatnot. Do you see your coming in, do you see an uphill battle that you need to fight, or is there what kind of relationship are you? I'm not sure how to exactly phrase my question, but it was, do you see a problem there for you coming in and replacing Angela Corey? And if so, or if not, you know, how do you plan on handling your relationship with the police department?
Thanks for the question.
I'll get my answer off the air. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks Mike. No, I do not see any problem working with law enforcement. I had a great working relationship with all the law enforcement I worked with for the 12 years I served as a prosecutor. Many of those folks, men and women who I worked with and were familiar with both my work ethic and my prosecutorial competence, came out and supported me, walked with us on Saturdays, contributed to our campaign. So we had broad support in law enforcement. And moving forward, I look forward to working with all three sheriffs of the three counties. I will have a good working relationship with law enforcement. I've said before, it's obviously the state attorney's office and law enforcement often share shared goals together, and I will continue a healthy, professional working relationship with law enforcement.
Sheriff Mike Williams endorsed Corey.
He did.
The NRA endorsed you, however. Do you think that made a difference for your campaign?
I think certainly the NRA's endorsement and acknowledgement of my commitment to the Constitution and the rule of law resonated with voters. And that message, not just limited to members of the NRA, but to all voters in the Fourth Circuit, I think it was clear through this election that a commitment to the Constitution and the rule of law mattered. And that message resonated in all three counties.
Eugene in Mandarin. Hi, Eugene. Good morning to you. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Specifically, I wanted to say first, congratulations. I voted for you on your issues and the things during the debate. I think you turned a lot of heads with your cares and concerns for the issues. So I think a lot of people who I spoke to had the same kind of connect with you on that level. but I wanted to know, what's your stance on the Stand Your Ground law? And more specifically, I think the way that Angela Curry handled the Trayvon Martin case was a lot of what people who was backing her kind of shied away after how that all, you know, went down. So what's your, I guess, your issues on the Stand Your Ground law, and if you could change it or not change it, how do you feel about that?
So first of all, as to Stand Your Ground, it is the law in the state of Florida. The position that I've just been elected to is a law enforcement position, not a legislative position. So thank you for your vote. You've elected me to enforce the laws of the state of Florida. As to your question about Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman, what I hope to be as your elected state attorney is an example of integrity in the judicial process. And so I certainly will make decisions that not everybody will agree with, but I will come to those decisions earnestly. I will be transparent in explaining those decisions to our community, and I will be respectful of the judicial process.
549-2937. I believe we have new public defender-elect Charles Kofer back on the line. Is this Charles Kofer? Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi there, and congratulations on your victory as well. Thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you very much, and congratulations to you, Ms. Nelson.
Congratulations to you.
I still have a little bump in the road to get over with in November, but assuming
that's
that
true. You have a write-in candidate. Melissa Nelson's write-in candidate stepped down. That is correct. So, yes, I stand corrected. But Charles Kofer, assuming you go ahead to victory in November, can you tell us a little bit about how you plan to work with the new state attorney in your capacity as public defender?
Well, first of all, I think we need to reestablish communication between the offices. There's certainly boundaries that have to be respected in an adversarial relationship, but I look forward to working with Ms. Nelson so that we can have smooth transitions into the new year and have the justice system working properly.
Thank you, and I look forward to working with you as well.
And Charles Kofer, while we have you on the line, we learned that right after the election, the departing public defender, Matt Shirk, fired 4 employees in the public defender's office. The question's been raised as to whether you would reinstate those employees. Is that something you're considering?
Well, I am scheduled to meet with Mr. Shirk tomorrow to begin discussing transition. That's certainly one of the issues that we will address. Haven't made any firm decisions, but as is the case with all the employees, I'll be assessing the employees and making staffing decisions. But it's a little early to do that, make decisions as to specific people.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. That's he has a write-in candidate in November, but for all intents and purposes, public defender-elect Charles Kofer. You never know who's going to call into this show. And as he said, Melissa Nelson, it is an adversarial relationship, but also one that requires good communication.
Absolutely.
That's another big part of your job, is dealing with the public defender's office.
I'm glad you mentioned communication, because in terms of priorities, that's something I'm also committed to, not just communicating well with law enforcement, but the public defender's office, but the community at large. I think it's important that the state attorney not only just be transparent, but obviously effectively communicate with the public decisions that come out of that office. And so while certainly the public defender's office and the state attorney's office do have an adverse relationship, there's a lot of opportunity when we talk about alternative sentencing and extrajudicial sentencing. There's also a lot of opportunity between those two offices to actually collaborate as well.
Do you feel that that Angela Curry did not communicate well the rationale behind some of her decisions?
It's going to be a priority of my office, and I hope to do it well and effectively. I think it's important that the public that I and Kofer are now elected to serve, we owe it to the public to explain our decisions in a way that makes that people can understand and then question and challenge if they disagree.
Lots of calls, meanwhile, for State Attorney-elect Melissa Nelson. perhaps the highest profile victor in the recent primary elections. Let's go to Lily in Duval County. Hi, Lily. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey,
good
go
morning.
Ahead.
How
yeah,
are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
I'm calling to ask about what you might be able to do about the pretrial detention facility in downtown Jacksonville. It may not be directly under your purview, I'm not sure, but I think it's widely known among attorneys that the conditions in the jail are absolutely horrible and unfit for a country like the United States. I mean, it's basically they live in a condition that is very similar to third world countries. And the way the guards treat the prisoners is worse than an animal. And furthermore, it's not just the way they are treated, but so many of the women who are in jail are drug addicts. And when they get out, they go right back into the drug problem because they have had no help finding a job, getting help with getting off of the their addiction to drugs. And I'm wondering what it is you can do to help change this so that the men and women in there can become law-abiding, responsible citizens here in Jacksonville rather than getting right back into the horrible cycle of crime in order to support their lives because they don't know what to do when they walk out that door. They've got no place to go.
Thanks, Lily.
So when I talk about alternative forms of sentencing, what I mean by that is using veterans court effectively so that we can, veterans who have been caught up in the system but may suffer from PTSD can get their feet underneath them and become productive. Same for drug addicted or substance abusers. I had on the campaign trail the great opportunity to meet with the City Rescue Mission, and they have a substance abuse program that they're anxious to bring to the court system, and I'm hoping to work with them in a way that we can do that, because obviously spending money incarcerating someone every single for a long period of time doesn't make sense for us as a whole if once released that individual has no other choice and doesn't have the mechanism to become productive member of society. So to the extent that we can avail ourselves to alternative forms of sentencing outside of the criminal justice system, we will all benefit from that. So I intend to really work hard to identify appropriate individuals for diversion and alternative sentencing.
Dave along I-95. Hi, Dave. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. You sort of touched on this in the previous discussion, but I wanted to ask you, Ms. Nelson, since at this point our jails and prisons have become the de facto mental health treatment centers, I was curious as to your position on perhaps legalizing mental illness. And I'll take my response.
Legalizing mental illness?
Yeah, because for all intents and purposes, if you have a mental illness, the system right now ends up putting mentally ill people in jail. A significant percentage of people that are in correctional or jail facilities have mental illnesses that directly relate to their offense. So that means effectively that having a mental illness is having an illegal problem because there aren't adequate means to attend to mental health outside of the judicial system.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Dave. He's certainly law enforcement leadership has pointed out the same problem, that the jail is the primary mental health facility in this area. And when you look at that piece of your new portfolio, how do you see that?
Well, you're right, Melissa, that both Sheriff Rutherford and Sheriff Williams have acknowledged, and the director of the jails actually has acknowledged that it is the largest mental health facility. So it's a reality that we have to deal with, and I'll work very hard with law enforcement to address it in the same way that I've talked about earlier in terms of alternative forms of sentencing. Mm-hmm. As you know, Florida is, 49th in the United States with mental health funding. So that's an issue well beyond my control. But when I talk about being smart in sentencing, mental health obviously is a part of that as well.
Let's take one more call. Richard in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Richard. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
The earlier caller asked about the stand your ground, and there was the perfect answer I think you gave Ms. Nelson, is that your job is not to, in essence, write the law, but to enforce the law. But one of the challenges that I had with Angela Corey was her interpretation of her job to enforce the law, which me, George Zimmerman walked, Marissa Alexander faced 20 years for firing a warning shot. When I read the news and see in the news that a white swimmer rapes a woman, gets 3 months, and is walking around a free man, and then a black woman is in jail for 20 years for firing a warning shot because of the way the state attorney interpreted the law, I think the question would be, how would you interpret the law, and do you see those types of interpretations as being unfair, or is it your intent to just be by the letter and treat everybody the exact same way, or are there opportunities to show compassion based on circumstances that don't just necessarily say, well, this white swimmer has a life ahead of him, and so he shouldn't get 3 months on more than 3 months, but this black woman gets 20 years. Those are the kinds of disparities that I think is the reason why you were placed in office, but obviously we won't know that until years from now. And my hope is that I will be supporting you 4 years from now as much as I supported you in this election. I'd like to hear what your thoughts are.
Thanks for that. Thank you for the question. Obviously, the case you're referring to is out of California, and you've hit on a very important point that's true of every elected state attorney in the United States, and that is there is a enormous amount of power and a great latitude for discretion. And that's why judgment is incredibly important in that position. I hope to continue to give you confidence in your support of me by earning your faith and confidence case by case, day by day, by doing the right thing and using my judgment and where appropriate, my discretion to get to the right result. Certainly, the law, the minimum mandatories that you're referring to, those statutes also afford prosecutors discretion. And I think for the 12 years as a prosecutor in the circuit, I demonstrated my ability to use my judgment in a wise manner. I committed to doing that on the campaign trail, and I look forward to proving that, proving true my pledge to the voters that I will exercise my discretion and use my judgment in a way that makes sense. I will never, let me just say this as well. I while the power is great, obviously, the way to check that power is at the ballot box. I think the community has spoken very loudly and strongly about what they expect from their elected officials and from their criminal justice actors, and I will abide by that expectation.
Well, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
She is State Attorney-elect Melissa Nelson, and she takes office in January.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you. And much more still ahead later, how the First Coast is celebrating the 100th anniversary of our national parks. A look inside the Jacksonville Children's Commission, but up next, raising awareness about a hidden health hazard this September. Back in a moment.
Community First Credit Union presents the Sing Out Loud Festival, featuring 28 concerts by over 100 artists, including Indigo Girls, The Lone Bellow, and Booker T. Jones, now through September 11th in St. Augustine, Florida. More at singoutloudfestival.com.
Florida, the ultimate swing state and the road to the White House. Join us for Decision Florida every Friday at 1 o'clock on 89.9, starting September 9th. Let your voice be heard.
On the next Fresh Air, Pamela Adlon, in her new semi-autobiographical FX series, Better Things, she plays an actress who's a single mother of three girls.
You're my mom! I want you to know if I have sex or if I want to get high.
Ah! No! Hide things from me! Please!
Adlon created the series with Louis C.K. and co-starred in Louis. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, an estimated 6 million people in the U.S. have an unruptured brain aneurysm. That's 1 in 50 people. Now, this can happen to you at any age, but it's most common in people aged 50 to 60. September is National Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month, and Dr. Nima Aga-Ibrahim is an interventional neurologist with Lyerly Neurosurgery and Baptist Health. Dr. Nima, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
I did not realize aneurysms were so common, first of all. I've thought of this as sort of a freak occurrence, but it's more common than people realize, it sounds like, correct?
Yes, so I'm glad you mentioned that, because as you said, 1 in 50 people could have unruptured cerebral aneurysm, which is a very important thing, especially if these aneurysms do bleed. They cause a very devastating problem, so the awareness of it is very important.
And what it is specifically is it's a weak spot on a blood vessel in the brain that can fill with blood.
Yes. So blood vessels, you know, carry blood into different organs. So if the blood vessel carries blood to the brain, that artery, if there's a weak spot on it, that can kind of bulge out like a balloon fills with air. And that over time, if it grows, can bleed.
And we hear stories of people having an aneurysm to horrible impact, and it seems so random, but there really are some risk factors too.
Exactly. That's, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because although some genetic risk factors do come into play, but we do have some modifying risk factors, such as smoking, and blood pressure, and drugs. So those are some of the things that we can control to prevent them from happening.
So what are the most important things that people need to be aware of this September, especially adults age 50 to 60? September is National Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month. How can we reduce our chances of this happening to us?
Excellent. That's an excellent question. So number one, I would say that prevention, so by controlling blood pressure, staying away from smoking, those are the things that we can definitely modify in a healthy lifestyle. Obviously, we cannot change our genetic. However, those are the other modifying things that we can do. And also, awareness is important. So, for example, if you have two blood relative family member with aneurysm, mm-hmm. it's important to know that you have a higher chance of having aneurysm. And therefore, being able to detect, and now we have a very excellent non-invasive way of treating them mm-hmm. Before they rupture. So those are the important thing to detect them prior to them bleeding.
And you do that at Baptist Health, Lyerly Neurosurgery, and the Stroke and Cerebrovascular Center at Baptist Jacksonville. What's the treatment like?
Exactly. So, you know, we had the treatment for aneurysms depend on location and what they are. One treatment that's been around for a long time is open, where you go in through the brain and put a clip across it. But now we have a newer way to treat these non-invasively through the artery by mm-hmm. putting coil. There are different devices. For example, at Baptist Jackson, we have multiple clinical trials. You're looking at these devices, and they're minimal invasive, and some flow diverters and some coiling that can be done to treat these aneurysm.
All very important information. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Of course. Thank you very much for having me.
September is National Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month, and Dr. Nima is an interventional neurologist with Lyerly Neurosurgery and Baptist Health. If you have a family history of aneurysms or just want more information, go to their website, baptistjacks.com/brain. And we'll be right back.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, focus has been on the presidential election, but heated congressional races in states like Arizona, Pennsylvania, and Florida are also underway. As Republicans look to hold on to Congress this fall, key races and the prospects for a change of control in the Senate and even the House.
At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJZT, your community, your world.
WJCT presents Ronnie King, our 2016 American Graduate Champion of the First Coast, dedicated to mentoring our youth.
Primarily, obviously, everybody knows that the STEM field is just increasing at a dramatic rate, and the minority representation in that field needs to increase as well.
To hear more stories of champions, watch American Graduate Day on WJCT, Saturday, September 17th at 1 p.m.
Classical music is available 22 hours a day on WJCT 89.9 FM HD2. Find out how you can listen to classical music by calling 358-6390. Enjoy classical music day or night on 89.9 HD2.
Welcome back. Well, summer camp is over and the kids are back in school, but the fall season is by no means a slow time for the Jacksonville Children's Commission. With a look ahead and a recap of the summer, we welcome CEO John Heyman. Good to see you. Good morning.
Good to see you, Melissa. Thank you.
And of course, you provide summer camp to thousands of kids across town. Had one of the biggest summers yet, right?
Absolutely. We had 106 camps just a couple years ago. We were running 72, and now 106, and they went fantastic. 6,600 kids were in summer camp for 5 to 7 weeks, all summer long, all day long. It was fantastic. No gang activity, no increase in violence in the city. It really worked.
And not only did it work, it was a godsend for a lot of parents that struggle to find an affordable camp for their kids,
I would think. That's right. And then they didn't have to pay for the camps. Those working poor, they did have to qualify for the camps. And the camp providers, many of them are fantastic, like the libraries, communities and schools, the Bridge of Northeast Florida, so many fantastic nonprofits. They received $75 per week per child. Now, I don't know which parent can send their kid to a camp for only $75 per week.
Yeah, that's a good deal. But summer camp is just one small piece of what goes on at the Jacksonville Children's Commission. As the school year gets underway, what are your biggest priorities for the next 9 months?
Well, the next 9 months or this following school year would be the kickoff, and it already has happened, of the after school programs. We have 71 of those, one of the largest in the Southeast, funded out of city dollars. So we're very grateful for the support of the mayor and the city council. Those are very, very successful programs and have been so for 15 years. That's one of our biggest priorities, our mental health focus through the full service schools. We've just designed something with Superintendent Vitti called Full Service School Plus. And that is actually putting the counselors and psychologists inside the schools rather than in a separate building. And this has resulted in its inaugural year last year in 150% more kids coming for services.
That is so important because as we discussed in the previous segment with the new state attorney, mental health challenges, both for kids and adults in this state, have not been adequately dealt with. And I guess the sooner you can intervene with a child that's having problems, the better. Especially in recent years, the data has really coalesced around the need to be more proactive.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I've seen, which deserves a full conversation, perhaps with some psychologists in the room, is that many kids are undiagnosed. They go undiagnosed, many times by their own choice. There's a stigma to it and things like that. But many kids are over-diagnosed and over-medicated. I mean, we feed 5 times the amount of methylphenidate than the rest of the world put together. That's Ritalin. That's what most people know it as.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean some kids don't need it, but I can't imagine they need it as much as we are doing it. That's over-diagnosing. So we have both the errors going on in the mental health arena.
And in addition to that, let's talk about the budget for the needs of children in this area. Your budget is going through the city council. At the same time, the Jacksonville Journey Crime Prevention Initiative is funded, but not at the levels it was say, 10 years ago. How do you plan to carry out all your imperatives for kids when we're looking at a budget that is fiscally stressed in a number of areas?
That's a good way to put it, fiscally stressed, like yeah. a rubber band that's
yes,
about to break.
Exactly.
We don't have enough resources to reach all the needs of all the kids in all the communities. It's an ugly assumption. I don't like it, but it's true. From 08 to 13, the first year I came here in 2013, just a couple days ago, I celebrated my three-year anniversary. Nobody sent me roses.
But Darn it.
We were recommended for an additional $2.5 million cut for children's services that very first day I was on the job. It was tough. We've restored some of those dollars. And again, I'm very grateful to the commitment of this mayor and this city council in their commitment to restoring many of those dollars. But we're still not up where we belong, nowhere close to it.
What would you envision then as when you look at all of your wants and needs, you're trying to accomplish a lot with tight dollars like so many other nonprofits. What is the biggest challenge in this community when it comes to meeting the needs of vulnerable children?
Yeah, vulnerable children. I'm glad you put it that way rather than poor kids, because mm-hmm. many of the things going on in our community and in cities in the nation have really very little to do with poverty. It has to do with what I call muscle memory. In other words, if I were to show your listeners what my hands are doing right now, there's a slight slope and increase in the promotion rate, has been so for about 10 years now, long into the recession. Graduation rate has gone up. So has poverty. So I'll repeat that again. Graduation went up while poverty went up, which means that we should pray for more poverty? Mm-hmm. Of course not. Mm-hmm. That's a ridiculous statement. However, then we have to assume that our worst enemy is not poverty. It's something deeper than that, and that is putting significant adults in front of children to reorient their muscle memory, sort of like the old Adam Sandler movie, Happy Gilmore, when a hockey player was trying to become a golfer. That's a full set of new muscle memory. That's what we need to do for these children. And that's why I'm more concerned about the quality of the staff in the school system, in the nonprofits, and in our city in general.
John Heyman, CEO of the Jacksonville Children's Commission. Thank you.
Thank you.
More in a moment.
Two new TV series about the complexities of black life are being produced by African Americans, and our TV critic says it makes a difference.
We don't honor our father by having strangers serve those grieving. We serve comfort food to those who need comfort, and we do it with our own hands!
Ava DuVernay's Queen Sugar and Donald Glover's Atlanta, next time on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Join WJCT and Baptist Health for Girls Day Out, Saturday, September 17th, Hyatt Hotel. The day will include great national and local speakers that will inspire and empower you to live your life to the fullest. Tickets are $40. Do not miss out. Log on to WJCT.org/Girls Day Out.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, a website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part 2. Sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, the National Park Service celebrates its 100th anniversary this year, and the Timequan Parks Foundation is marking the centennial with a one-of-a-kind event. Board President Barbara Goodman and Executive Director Mark Middlebrook here now with a preview of Harvest Moon Rising and the National Park Centennial Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
And in a moment, Barbara, we'll talk about this event. Of course, you recently retired as the director of our national park, which was a big change in command. More about that in a moment. But first, Mark Middlebrook, the Timucuan Parks Foundation is a group that brings together the national, state, and city parks, correct, in Northeast Florida?
That's correct. It's been around for 17 years. It was initially started during the Delaney administration.
Right.
And so it's been a very unique and very beneficial partnership.
Because the Timucuan Preserve, I think, is an absolute gem for this community and one that more people need to know about and take advantage of.
Without question. It's an extraordinary area. And to see some of these areas that are within the city limits, are it's just amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But the partnership is unique nationally. We're the only ones in the country that do what we do.
And so that has to be supported. Now, Barbara, as I said, you recently retired after an incredible career with the National Park Service, but you're still involved in all of this. And Harvest Moon Rising is going to be perfectly timed to the National Park Centennial.
That's right. And so we're going to celebrate the accomplishments for the year and the centennial, 100 years of the National Park Service. And we're going to have Mark Woods, who has been a guest on the show and everybody knows, in his book, Lassoing the Sun, and he's going to be there to...
Oh, is he going to be reading from his book?
He's going to have his book. He's going to sell his book and sign it and talk to us about his book. And so that will be fun. We're going to have some great, great food, and it's the night of the harvest moon, so that's the
point. Yeah, this is Saturday, September 17th. Now, I've never been to this particular location in the park. This is the Broward House, the historic home of Florida's 19th governor, Napoleon Bonaparte Broward. It's now managed by the National Park Service, and it's the headquarters of your foundation. I've never been to this place. Where exactly is it in the park?
It's right on Heckscher, right at the entrance to Fort George Island.
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's the old White House, two-story, that's on the corner.
And so for a lot of people that come out to this event, I'm guessing it'll be their first time there, too.
A lot of people drive by it,
yeah,
and they always say, can we come in? And
yeah,
so this will be an opportunity to come in. They'll be able to take tours of the house and see the inside, and for many it will be the first time.
And, you know, it's exciting that you're doing this because the national parks, of course, we like to talk about here at 89.9 and WJCT Television. Anyone that watched the Ken Burns documentaries on the parks, when he called them America's best idea, I don't think that was overstating it. They are truly such a special piece of what makes this country just an incredible place to drive through and tour and visit. And I love to talk about the Timucuan Preserve because people know Yellowstone and they know Acadia in Maine and so forth. But people right here in Jacksonville might not realize we have a beautiful national park too. And this is a way to support that and learn about it, right?
Absolutely. It is widely unknown. We have a lot of parks that are not widely known in the community. But the history of the Timucuan stretches almost 6,000 years. So it's an incredible area.
Absolutely. Now, again, this is coming up on Saturday, September 17th, Barbara, Harvest Moon Rising at the home of Napoleon Bonaparte Broward, the 19th governor of Florida. There's a bridge named after him in this area. It's a trivia question which one it is. Some people might know. But how can people get their tickets?
Well, they can go to our website, timucuanparks.org, and that's T-I-M-U-C-U-A-N, parks.org. And we really encourage everybody, go to our website today, go right now, unless you're driving, get your tickets. They are selling out fast. We've got tickets left, but we really encourage everybody, go get your tickets today and join us. It really will be a fun event, and we are going to have the telescopes out. We're going to be looking at that really awesome harvest moon.
Harvest moon. It's Harvest Moon Rising. And by the way, they're promising Florida cracker home style vittles. I love that word. A specialty harvest moonshine cocktail, live music, Lassoing the Sun author Mark Woods, reading from his book, as Barbara mentioned, and a whole lot more. This is really a special fall event. Barbara Goodman and Mark Middlebrook, thanks for sharing this with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app and watch the show with video on demand at our partner TVJax.com. Next on Diane Rehm, heated congressional races in Arizona, Pennsylvania, and here in Florida are underway. A closer look coming up. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.